Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. One of the pioneers in syndicated and international TV distribution has a new role. Senior advisor to Chicken Soup for the Soul Entertainment's Halcyon Studios, Michael J. Solomon, joins me next. We'll catch up with interactive TV player GenVid Technologies in our second half hour through newly named Entertainment Division President Andrew Schneider. Plus, learn what's new from World Channel from General TV Manager Liz Chen and Executive Producer Patricia Nunez. That's off to the top of the next hour. Also ahead, Daredevil's TV comeback via Disney+, Netflix's Heartstopper Call, and our classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. I present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Verbal, and Reason. And it's BarbieTelevised.onPodium.com. This just in on this Friday afternoon, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to all the good stuff whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Great to have you with us for a super 90-minute edition of the program all about TV's current and future. 63 degrees at the top of the hour. We're expecting a mini heat wave coming into the New York metro area and other parts of the East Coast and the South this weekend. So if you're in that neck of the woods, please, Saturday and Sunday, take it easy, drink lots of fluids, and have yourself a great time no matter what. We have some wonderful guests for you over the next 90 minutes. We invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone, raise your voice, and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn Radio. Our chat room is open for business, too, and ready for you. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Use the phone or the room. Either way, you're involved. While the program is on the air, you can connect with others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk speaker, or tune in screen. Follow the instructions. Other people live with you. Michael J. Solomon from Chicken Soup for the Soul's Halcyon Studios. He'll join me from Los Angeles after these news notes. Never say die about Daredevil's TV existence, apparently. 4 years after Marvel canceled 3 seasons of Daredevil on Netflix, New Adventures of the Man Without Fear are in the works for Disney+. Former co-creators Matt Corman and Chris Ord are, according to various reports, ready to executive produce and write this new Daredevil series. Will Charlie Cox play Daredevil again following his recent cameo in the mega-hit movie Spider-Man No Way Home? No answer yet. Also at Disney+, Big Hero 6 offshoot tune Baymax will premiere June 29th. 6 episodes are ready to go, featuring the healthcare-minded robot. Acclaimed Boy Meets Boy dramedy Heartstoppers will get 2 more seasons on Netflix. Creator Alex Osman returns as the lead writer. Now before our first guest, some quickies. Apple TV's live-action Godzilla now has a new name, Godzilla and the Titans. WandaVision director Matt Shackman will be an executive producer and direct the first 2 episodes. NBC will keep the current Emmy Awards production team, Dune and Dusted, along with producer Reginald Hudlin, going for the next Emmy telecast. That'll be on September 12th. Want to be a Hulu subscriber? You can at $1 a month for 3 months. That's the ad-supported version if you sign up between now and next Friday. The Lake begins its Prime Video run on June 17th. Julia Stiles into the cast. And Saints and Sinners offers its final episode in its long run on Bounce TV this Sunday night. And that is news notes for today. My first guest has been someone very big in the TV world, but believe it or not, over a half century. Along the way, he's been a pioneer in the world of syndication by forming a company called Telepictures, which did The People's Court and still does, as well as other marvelous first-run syndicated shows. That company later merged with Lorimar to become Lorimar Telepictures. Remember, they did the $1 million chance of a lifetime, one of the first syndicated primetime shows to offer $1 million as a regular prize. And then it all got into Warner Brothers' hands in the 1990s. But that's not all. He's also been a forerunner in the world of international TV distribution. And last year, he became a senior advisor to Chicken Soup for the Soul's production company, Halcyon Studios. Joining us live from Los Angeles in an air radio exclusive, one of the great, great people in the world of TV, Michael J. Solomon. Michael, it is an honor to have you here.
Thank you so much, Simon. Pleasure to be here.
Why did you decide to have your latest act be with Chicken Soup and with Halcyon?
Well, years ago, I formed a platform which focused on on the faith world, and the chairman of Chicken Soup I sold it to, and he later on asked me to join the company and help him grow it, and wanted me to focus on co-production and productions and worldwide syndication. And so for the past year, I've been doing that and helping them grow. And up until now, I've introduced Halcyon to many producers, not only in the U.S., but internationally as well. And we have now two series in development, and we have four or five others on the verge of being developed. And I also help them expand in various areas internationally, taking Chicken Soup to various parts of the world. And so I have you can imagine, an extended Rolodex, and know pretty much everybody in Europe and Asia, Latin America, et cetera. So Chicken Soup is benefiting from all of those relationships.
What do you think about the fact that Chicken Soup is really coming on strong because they've got Crackle, which is the mega content service they bought from Sony several years ago, but now they have this ad-supported channel that's running on smart TV sets and smart device and multi-channel bundles. Plus, they've acquired a number of production companies. Halcyon included, it was founded by the people who did Sonar Entertainment before then, that did the DOS Boot miniseries, other things too. And they have this now infrastructure that they can put together programming, both scripted and unscripted, for any one of their properties.
Well, the benefit of Chicken Soup is it's not an octopus. Warner Brothers and some of the other companies I work for were so huge. But Chicken Soup is sort of like a boutique outfit. And they're zigging while other people zag. And so they've developed advertiser-supported infrastructure, and they're probably the largest company today in that area, in advertiser-supported programming. And now they're worldwide, and their international operation is growing beside their domestic operation. So I'm very, very confident in Chicken Soup. The chairman and CEO, Bill Rohana, is really running a wonderful tight ship and doing very well, and he surrounded himself with terrific people, and I'm working with many of them in helping the company grow.
What are some of the programs that Halcyon is working on, and when will we see them?
Well, we're working. This is a funny business, and until we actually sign the contracts, it's a little premature to announce something. And I'm sure you could appreciate that. But my guess is that we're working. We're developing two reality shows. And I would guess that within 6 months, both of them should be on the air using an old-fashioned nomenclature. And they'll be seen pretty much throughout the United States and internationally as well.
Mm-hmm. I do understand, though, that they're also working on some scripted projects, including one from the writer of L.A. Confidential, James Ellroy.
And there are probably four or five other scripted projects that they're working on beside that.
You're hearing Michael J. Solomon. He is one of the major television executives. He's been around this industry for over a half century, and he's with us live from Los Angeles this half hour right here on Mojave Televised. He's senior advisor to Halcyon Studios, one of a number of production houses now involved with Chicken Soup for the Soul Entertainment, the folks behind mega content service Crackle, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul AVOD, or ad-supported channel, now playing since last month on smart TV sets and smart devices, as well as multi-channel bundles. If you have a question or comment for Michael, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Three episodes coming your way next week, starting Monday at this very hour. Our first guest will be the people behind a brand-new Disney Channel series, one of two that will be launching on June 3rd, called Ultraviolet and Black Scorpion. They're the folks that for several years put together a terrific series for Netflix called Alexa and Karen. Their names are Leo Chu and Eric Garcia, and they're the executive producers and showrunners of their new Disney Channel series. And then remember Face? That's the popular mascot that filled the screen for Nick Jr. in the 1990s. Went, da-da-da-da! Well, Face is going to turn Dick Clark for a new series that's premiering next month on Nick Jr. called Face's Music Party, and we'll hear from executive producer David Hellier. That's all coming up Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Instead of putting your syndication cap on, Michael, it seems that this year is definitely going to be a transition year for broadcast syndication. We're seeing the end of Ellen DeGeneres. I believe her final week of shows is next week. We're seeing the end of Wendy Williams, as well as Judge Jerry Springer. Maury is going bye-bye. A lot of other shows, too. What's your sense of where the syndication scene is at?
Well, syndication doesn't really work unless you have a tremendous number of episodes. And it's very rare that programs like Ellen, by the way, which was Telepictures, it's very rare that they have as many episodes as they do. Syndication doesn't work unless you have at least anywhere between 44 and 144 episodes. And all of those programs that you mentioned were daily shows and on the air for many, many years. But I think that the public has grown very sophisticated, more so than ever, and I don't think there's a great need in the marketplace for those kind of shows anymore. So if you don't have a lot of episodes, some of them have 300, 400, 500 episodes, then syndication really can't exist. And so if you produce a show and it only lasts for one season, there's no syndicated life after the show. So that's a fact of life. And Ellen, for example, I think she quit because she wants to do other things. And she's on that show, I don't know how many years, 10, 12, 15 years. And she just wants to do other things. Jerry Springer as well. So, and Wendy Williams, they want to go on and do other things. When you're on air that long for 4, 5, 6, 8 years, people want to do other things. So, but linear television is still very much alive, and people think that it's dying, but it's not. If you look at Dick Wolf, and Dick has six primetime shows on the air, and he prefers to produce for the networks rather than for the platforms. So his programs have been lasting 20, 21, 22 years, SVU, for example, and they will go into, they are already into syndication, so syndication is alive and well, again, depending on how many episodes have been produced.
Do you see anyone picking up the talk or talk variety show mantle as a host? From people like Ellen or currently Kelly Clarkson. For example, Jennifer Hudson, who has a new talk show, which Warner Brothers is syndicating this fall, really showcased her chops yesterday at Warner Brothers Discovery's first ever upfront at Madison Square Garden, which I had a chance to see. She was really like the star of the event, the celebrity host. She did a monologue at the beginning. She did a talk segment with two of Home and Garden Television's personalities, and then she did her amazing version of Respect and got the audience involved. We're talking about like 11 o'clock, 11:30 in the morning to do a sing-along of the R-E-S-P-C-T rip. It seems that Jennifer might be somebody that that could breathe a new set of life into syndicated talk shows.
Well, I think you're right, because talent rules the roost. That's why Kelly Clarkson is a success, because she has so much talent. Jennifer has a tremendous amount of talent. She's smart. She's now attractive, having lost all of that weight, and an extraordinary singer. But more important, she has the respect in the industry. So she could pretty much, her people could call anybody to be on the show, and they'll get 99.9% yeses. to be on that show because she demands so much respect because of her talent and who she is. And that's the key. Who's the star? You know, what attracts the audience? Attracts the audience is personalities. And she is very, very well known, having been on The Voice and winning an Oscar and always on television. I think she'll be very successful.
What do you think of the situation with game shows? You know, we have Family Feud, we have Wheel of Fortune, we have Jeopardy. We still have shows like 25 Words or Less. Looks like Jay Leno's series, You Bet Your Life, which I had some really personal thought. I had some real qualms about. I thought the show was not well handled compared to the Bill Cosby version. I thought Jay tried to do it too much like The Tonight Show and not enough like what Groucho Marx did. Including the fact that he sort of gave away the secret word to contestants, which if John Goodell had been running the thing, I think he would have had a blew a gasket. But it seems the thing that I think is interesting about the game show situation is that the last 2 years, it's really been, I think, been impacted by the – more than any other genre of syndicated television has really been hurt by the coronavirus pandemic. The lack of audience going to applause tracks. In the case of Merit Theater, is 20 Words of Less doing it from home? It just seems that this coming year is going to be a very important year for game shows in terms of trying to get their mojo back.
Yeah, I'm personally not a fan of game shows. I don't watch it. My family doesn't watch game shows, and I think that game shows are popular when they give away a hell of a lot of money, and I think that's especially today in the financial situation in the United States. Today, I think the more money these game shows give away, the better it is. But game shows always survive depending on the host is, who the host is. We started reality shows with People's Court with Judge Wapner and. And then Chuck, forgot his last name of, what the hell is the name of that? It was a dating show. I forgot, but he was very popular. Love Connection. Thank you. Chuck Woolery. And Chuck was very, very popular. So it all really depends on how much money is being given away and who the host is. So if you don't have that combination, then it's not going to work.
One more thing about syndication, we'll move to another topic, is it seems the courtroom genre just continues to go, go, go. I mean, Judge Judy, for example, is no longer doing her syndicated show. She's now doing Judy Justice for Amazon's freebie service and doing very well. It's going to a second season. And yet that is still the number one court show in reruns. And plus she has Hot Bench. You have Judge Mathis, which is a Telepictures production, which continues to roll along, People's Court. And it seems that divorce, according to the other ones, have hung in there, and there's a new one called Relative Justice that started this season that looks like we'll go to a second. It seems that the court genre and Byron Allen's court shows also just seems to keep rolling along.
Yeah, well, we pioneered it with People's Court 38 years ago, and Judge Judy is a direct copy of People's Court. And every time I see Judge Judy, I said, hey, you owe me 10%. And of course, she said, don't worry, Michael, the check is in the mail. So, you know, Judge Judy and all of these court shows pretty much were direct copies of People's Court, which was produced by Ralph Edwards and Stu Billett. Unfortunately, Stu just died. But Stu Billett made his living for many, many years, over 30 years, with the syndicated revenues of People's Court. And People's Court is the godfather, and court shows remain to be very, very popular. But again, it depends on who the judge is. And Judge Judy was very, very popular because of who she is and how she conducted her court. Very tough on people, but really professional. And so all the other judges are copying her and copying Judge Wapner. And so they continue to be a success, and that's something that people want. They want to see the results of people suing each other and who's going to win and who's going to lose. So, and usually there are two or three cases in each half hour, which makes it more interesting and doesn't make it boring. So the format of court shows is still very attractive, and I think will always be there. Not only that, but court shows now are throughout the world, people copying the format in different languages and according to the laws of different countries. So that was a source of revenue that we with People's Court never counted on, that in Europe and Asia and Latin America, they copied People's Court and paid us a royalty fee.
You know, one of the interesting ones I've seen on YouTube is Judge Rinder from England. And that judge is some judge. He is some character, I got to tell you. But, you know, the thing about People's Court that people should know is that it really was a groundbreaker for television, because before that, there were daytime court shows in syndication and on network. There were shows like Day in Court, Divorce Court, The Verdict is Yours, and so forth. But they were recreations where you had actors play the litigants. And in the case of Divorce Court, you did have actual lawyers. Even the judge, by the way, Voltaire Perkins in the original Divorce Court, was not a real judge. He was an actor. So it was recently recreations, and People's Court was the first one to have real life all the way, the litigants, the judge, the bailiff, and so on and so forth. And I think that's what really broke ground.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. It was totally non-scripted, and as a matter of fact, after being in this business for over 60 years, I'm very well known for two things. Number one is I hired Judge Wapner, and number two, I'm married to a Bond girl. So after all the things I've done, people still remember Judge Wapner, which is amazing.
Well, speaking of Michael J. Solomon, he is the former co-founder of Telepictures, one of the major syndication companies, later Lorimar Telepictures, then acquired by Warner Bros. Television, still doing television shows like The Ellen DeGeneres Show, which is wrapping up its final season next week, and Judge Mathis, which is running in daytime syndication on many markets along the country. And he's with us live from Los Angeles. This half hour on tomorrow will be televised. By the way, he's currently senior advisor of Halcyon Studios, one of the production companies of Chicken Soup for the Soul Entertainment, the folks behind Crackle, and the new Chicken Soup for the Soul service that's running on smart TV sets, smart device, and multi-channel bundles. If you have a question or comment in our final minutes with Michael, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. The Weather Channel in Espanol has now been running for 3 weeks since it launched earlier this month, timed with the Weather Channel's 40th anniversary. Wednesday on Tomorrow Be Televised Special Edition, we will have the editor-in-chief, the person that made the service possible, Susie Ruiz. And Friday, 1 week from today on our program, we will lead off with the creator and executive producer of the new AMC drama, Dark Winds. The co-executive producers, just Robert Redford, and the creator of Game of Thrones, George R. R. Martin. Graham Rowland will be with us. I think you'll find him a very important producer. And it is a groundbreaker, by the way, for Native Americans on television. It's Graham Rowland from Dark Winds. He's our lead guest 1 week from today, exclusively here live on Tomorrow Be Televised. Before you go, Michael, I wanted to talk a little bit about international programming, because it seems that there is now a breakthrough going on where we're seeing shows that are in multiple languages making it in the United States as well as around the world. You talk about, you know, Netflix and Squid Game, but also Pachinko on Apple TV Plus, Now and Then, which is premiering today, which is bilingual, English and Spanish. What do you think about this new wave of shows that are multiple language?
Well, actually, Netflix, because of Netflix, people got used to subtitles. And 6-7 years ago, Americans did not like anything that was subtitles. But then all of a sudden, the quality of shows being produced outside the United States, and for example, Turkish soap operas became very, very popular. And people like to hear the actual voices. So anything dubbed from Turkish to English or Spanish to English really doesn't work anymore. People like to hear the actual actors, and I think that has been the reason why international productions have become very, very popular, because people at the end of the day lean towards good stories, and it doesn't really matter what language the production is. And so every production house today, major production house like Warner Brothers and Paramount, et cetera, has production affiliates in Europe and Asia and Latin America, et cetera. And Netflix is very, very involved in co-productions. And as a matter of fact, Halcyon Studios also were very involved in co-producing. And that has opened up a whole new area. I mean, if you go to MIP in Cannes and MIPCOM and NAPI, et cetera, which are the markets for our industry, you will find that most of the conversations that are going on today are co-productions. Co-productions between the U.S. And European countries and Latin American countries and Asian countries, et cetera. And so that is growing, and that'll continue to grow. And people are used to now good programming in various languages. And that'll continue for sure.
Before you go, Michael, what excites you about where TV is going right now?
Well, the streaming companies have started a whole new area of our industry, and I believe that more shows are being produced today than ever before. I think the number of talent, actors, producers, writers, directors, etc., has increased enormously because each of these streaming companies, which I think there are about 10 or 12 today, are competing with each other for talent, good stories, and especially writers. It's difficult to find good stories today. And I think that that these companies today have teams of people living in Asia and Latin America looking for good stories, and it doesn't matter what language it is, because co-productions are really the future, and it's going to remain that way.
Mm-hmm. If you want to know more about who Michael is working for these days, Halcyon Studios, part of Chicken Soup for the Soul Entertainment, here's where you go online. It's halcyonstudios.tv. That's H-A-L-C-Y-O-N Studios, or one phrase, .tv. And we'll be looking forward to seeing their original scripted and unscripted filming in the weeks and months to come. Michael J. Solomon, it has been a delight and honor to have you on this program. Congratulations on everything you've accomplished in your incredible TV career, and good luck to you and all the folks at Halcyon for bringing us more great television in times to come. It's been great to have you on.
Thank you, Simon. It was terrific to be on your show, and good luck with it as well.
Thank you very much, Michael. Take care. Have a fantastic weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Michael J. Solomon, senior advisor to Halcyon Studios and really one of the pioneering people in television on a lot of different fronts, joining us live from Los Angeles. More tomorrow. We tell by coming away, but first some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. You ever want to find out about the ways that you can be better in life, no matter what kind of occupation you have? Well, a man by the name of Cameron Hayes has just come out with an audiobook called Endure. It's all about him learning some outdoorsman skills and what it took for him to do it and what life lessons he got from it. And now you can check out books like Endure if you are becoming a member with a one-month trial to Audible.com. Remember, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital entertainment information and inspiration. There's over 250,000 titles to choose from at any given time. And you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now. It's Blog Talk Radio, SpeakerTune Radio, all of our podcast affiliates, and on their website, tomorrowbetelevised.onpodium.com. All you got to do is sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audiobook, that one-month trial, great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com, and while the supply lasts, very important health and wellness information. Remember, if you're an Amazon Prime customer, you get two audiobooks for your trial, one of them from the growing catalog of Audible Originals, everything from podcast series, off-Broadway, Broadway regional performances, one-man shows, and so much more. For all details, go to audibletrial.com/televised. Coming up over the next hour, we will talk with the people behind the World Channel from WGBH in Boston and some interesting original things that they are up to lately. But first, before our classic trivia question of the week, we have a very unique person. He is about 24 hours into his brand new role with interactive TV player GenVid Technologies. New Entertainment President Andrew Snyder joins me from Long Island after he paused at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker.com, Tune.com. Together, reach over 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Check out all the latest in sports, including the PGA Championship, third round coming up tomorrow, plus the latest on the NBA playoffs, the Stanley Cup playoffs, baseball, and more on Post Time with the Greek. This weekend, it's on both Saturday and Sunday. That's tomorrow and Sunday, 11:30 a.m. Eastern, 8:30 Pacific, special new time. 11:30 a.m. Eastern, 8:30 a.m. Pacific. That's tomorrow and Sunday, Post Time with the Greek, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, that's VCharge 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our second half hour of Tomorrow Televised. Well, you're just joining us at the bottom of the hour. This time I'm with you live from New Weather, York. 63 degrees at the top of the hour. And if you have a question or comment for our guests ahead in the hour to come, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Over the last year and a half, we've been covering a company that is trying to make interactive TV happen all over the place called GenVid Technologies. Well, yesterday, they brought on an executive to be their entertainment president, someone who's had a lot of experience in all sorts of places, everywhere from Disney and ESPN Plus to Fox Bet and PokerStars USA. And we have him in one of his first interviews since joining forces with GenVid yesterday. Joining us live from Long Island, New York, Andrew Snyder. Andrew, congratulations and happy you're with us.
Thanks so much, Simon. It's great to be here. Appreciate you having me on.
It's a pleasure, Andrew. Why take on the role?
Well, I think GenVid is off to an incredible start, first of all. The founders have a really bold vision, super ambitious, and it's just great to see kind of innovation after a brand new technology has been rolled out, like cloud computing, and figuring out how to then create these new entertainment and narrative experiences on top of that technology. So that's really intriguing for me and something that resonated throughout my career in digital entertainment as well. So I think we're all very much kindred spirits here at GenVid now.
Mm-hmm. GenVid, of course, made its mark over the last year with an event on both Facebook Watch and Portal TV, which is available, both available through smart TV sets and smart devices, called Rival Peak, which used artificial intelligence to create these characters in this environment that the audience could control, and then by vote different characters off every week through a special half-hour show. What is the interactive picture like now for GenVid since you've come aboard?
Yeah, absolutely. And Rival Peak was really an interesting experimental project. As you mentioned, it's commissioned by Facebook as a Facebook Watch exclusive. There was a lot of learning from that for sure. And you describe it as interactive TV. But what I really see it as is the convergence of video gaming and narrative storytelling. And that's where I see GenVid sitting in the ecosystem and striving to deliver a brand new form of entertainment by combining the best of both of those things, traditional storytelling with the immersion and interaction of video games. And as you mentioned, Rival Peak was the first project in a category that the company has dubbed massively interactive live events, or MILES for short. And so, you know, Rival Peak was definitely an exciting project. There were millions of people streaming, hundreds of millions of minutes spent watching 13 simultaneous interactive live streams and actually being able to impact what they were watching, which is the real novel part about all of this, especially for fans of genre programming and other things like that.
You're coming aboard at a very interesting time. We just had the upfronts this week here in New York, the new fronts 2 weeks ago, and one of the things that came loud and clear from both of these sets of events is that interactive TV may be on the verge of really coming big time, becoming mainstream in several ways. One is through fitness and exercise services like Peloton and Beachbody. Interactive advertising looks like it's finally starting to happen. Yesterday we had one of the key people at Roku And that was Christina Shepherd talking about the fact that this summer they're going to be launching interactive ads where you can order products and services at the TV set without having to use a smartphone or a tablet or something else along with it. And it seems that this would be like a perfect time for GenVid to really blossom with TV's help.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's really interesting to see all these new forms of programming rolling out that are inherently interactive. And I think if you look at the history of entertainment and entertainment technology, just from the early days in the transition of radio to TV, a lot of what was being broadcast on TV were radio shows until new formats emerged. And you and your previous guest talked about game shows, soap operas. New formats emerge when there's new technology. And we've seen this even during, you know, when I started working in digital entertainment, where was the Jurassic era of the internet. We saw new ways to market, new direct response vehicles for advertisers, and technology keeps progressing. Consumer demand keeps progressing, and it's incumbent on companies, big and small, to figure out ways to harness that technology in new and creative ways, new ways to monetize, new ways to tell stories, new ways to engage with audiences. And so those examples were great that you cited. And GenVid's approach here is to say, well, how do all these new technologies, including interactive broadcast streaming, including cloud computing, help consumers now engage with the story in a very meaningful way? In fact, have influence over this story, have agency over how characters could develop or how a story might go, either as an individual or as a community at large. So we're here at the cusp pioneering that type of storytelling, which is very, very exciting and will be an amazing experience for consumers.
It seems that one of the things that held interactive TV back, Andrew, for years was that the technology to the viewer came across as too cumbersome. You know, I got to do all these steps to make it happen, or it's just consumer unfriendly. It seems that the breakthrough here, at least with smart TV sets and smart devices, whether it's a set from Samsung or Amazon or X-Class or TCL or Vizio, LG, et cetera, or a Roku or a streaming and so forth, is that there's artificial intelligence built into these products, audio and more recently video, which allows, for example, a Siri, a Google Assistant, a Alexa, a Cortina, something you would use usually through a speaker. It goes to the television set, so all you have to do is be with the set, raise your voice, use a voice remote to do it, and it seems that that is what's triggering the interest level in interactive TV, where people can have both a lean forward and a lean back experience. And it seems that that is, I think, what is, for a lot of people now, triggering, with companies like GenVid, triggering the interest level in interactivity, that you can now do the kind of ambitious project you can do, and it's easy for the viewer to use it and control it.
Simon, absolutely. And you mentioned a lot there. So let's just unpack a couple concepts, I think. Number one is distribution, right? And when you're talking about distribution of short form or long form video to a large format television in a living room, you know, that is a primary use case that I think a lot of people talk about and think about when they are discussing interactive TV. And look, what is that enabled by, right? It was enabled by high speed broadband to the home. So you can move high-quality internet video to someone's home. And where did it go? Well, there were a number of third-party devices like Roku's that made it really easy. Then the OEMs, like you mentioned, the Sony's, the Samsung's, the LG's, started baking that functionality into an operating system, right? And then the voice control makes it a lot easier to navigate. That's for sure, right? So now you have a lot of people who are able to lean back. It's accessible in almost every TV that ships now. And the streaming companies, and I know this firsthand, have a significant amount of investment in making sure their applications work seamlessly on all of those devices and are backward compatible. to even older devices, right? You could probably remember a time when you had a Blu-ray player in your home and all of a sudden it was network Blu-ray player, right? Could get Netflix in the very early days. And it's important from a developer perspective, from a streamer perspective, to make it easy, to make it seamless, to consume content that is being distributed via the internet in the places that people want to watch, which is primarily their living room, but frankly, wherever, right? On a mobile device, on a tablet, wherever they might be, that accessibility is really important. And from the GemBid point of view, accessibility is equally important in the same way where any of our experiences can be accessed seamlessly through any web browser, right? You press play and it just works, which is really awesome. But unlike just a pure distribution mechanism, it is really a new form of programming that is inherently interactive, right? It's not about consuming linear programming only. And you can do that if you so choose, as you could in Rival Peak, but it's that opportunity to really lean in and participate and make your mark on the characters and the story and the world that you're engaging with and that GemBid's bringing to you.
In a moment, we're going to talk about GemBid's next project, which happens to be a spinoff of The Walking Dead called Last Mile. And we'll talk about that with the new head of entertainment at GemBid Technologies. That's Andrew Schneider. He joins us live from Long Island this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Happy you're with us, too. Thanks for being part of your Friday afternoon with us. It's Simon Abbott with you live from New York. If you have a question or comment for Andrew, go ahead and ring it in, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room. Simon Apple 04 by name. If you're just joining us, I want to remind you that coming up, we have three episodes next week, and our first episode of the week on Monday, we will have Leo Chu and Eric Garcia. They are the executive producers and showrunners for the brand new Disney Channel series premiering in early June, Ultraviolet and Black Scorpion, one of two that will be presented on the same night. And for all you Face fans of that mascot of Nick Jr., well, Face is coming back next month in a brand new Faces Music Party series, and we've got the executive producer, David Kelleher. That's coming up Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And stay tuned, because near top of the hour, we'll have your final chance to check out our current classic trivia question. You could win two great best-selling books, Binge Times, all about the world of television, where it's at and where it's going, and a Rugrats Hanukkah. So stay tuned. Get your thing caps on. You could be our next classic trivia winner. So talk about The Walking Dead Last Mile. Where is that standing as you come into GemBid?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is a super exciting project. It's in partnership with Skybound Entertainment and Pipeworks, who is a developer on the project. And it will also, like Rival Peak, be on Facebook. So part Facebook Gaming, part Facebook Watch. So the project's coming along really, really well. We're looking at a launch later this summer, and it is just going to be a huge treat for fans of The Walking Dead, of course, which has just an incredible history to it, rich characters and worlds, and this will be the first time that a participant can impact the canon of the story. Which is going to be super exciting for fans.
Mm-hmm. How ambitious is it? What kind of plot line does this have compared to the Walking Dead TV series and their spinoffs on AMC?
Yeah, so it is based primarily on comic books, right? So it is a different world than what you would see on TV. And it takes place in a very cold environment. So something that that fans have not seen before. And so that'll be very exciting and special for fans. And this will run for many, many weeks. And the real benefit here is that a player simply needs a browser that allows them to access Facebook, and they can decide how involved they want to be. They can sit back and watch the events unfold, or through interactive elements, participate. But the real benefit here is being able to influence the characters and the plot line that will become, as I mentioned before, canon in the Walking Dead universe.
Mm-hmm. Aside from Walking Dead, what else is in the GenVid pipeline? What do you see in the near or not too far distant future?
Yeah, well, we've got several projects in various stages of development, which are all looking very exciting. And like Rival Peak, we'll learn a lot from The Walking Dead Last Mile and iterate, get better at this form of entertainment. But stay tuned. We'll have a lot more to tell you shortly about those other projects.
Mm-hmm. Incidentally, what do you think about Portal TV? I mean, Portal TV has been a pioneer in terms of putting video chat on the television set, as well as doing augmented reality, where people at home can actually be augmented reality characters live as they're talking to their offspring or friends or family or family members, whatever. Do you see that becoming part of what GenVid's up to? Because you're on Facebook Watch, which, incidentally, again, we have to remind people, is available on other smart TV sets and smart TV devices. Although Meta, Facebook's parent, seems to still want to downplay that opportunity.
Right. Well, I think the concept of an avatar or a digital personal representation of a viewer, a player, or a chat participant has become pretty mainstream, whether you're in a work environment and you've got your Slack avatars or through Snapchat for, you know, millions and millions of people. So digital representations, the personalization of digital representations have real economy and social impact to them. I mean, we see this in video games all the time. And so the idea that that type of personalization of yourself in a digital form coming into other areas is not surprising to me. And for the miles that GenVid is launching, there will be opportunities for representation of yourself even within the mile, right? So whether it's a real-life photo or a digital representation, that's that we're going next to add that level of interactivity and really unique experiences to fans of franchises that they've never had before.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Andrew Schneider. He is the new president of GenVid Entertainment. He is also, by the way, chief marketing officer of the parent company, GenVid Technologies. He joins us live from Long Island this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. And wherever you're joining us from, we're delighted to have you aboard for the ride. Simon Abram with you live from New York on this Friday afternoon, 63 degrees at the top of the hour. And if you have a question or comment, I'm meeting this with Andrew, make that call. Raise your voice. 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. In case you don't know, the Weather Channel is now available in a full-fledged Spanish-language service, the Weather Channel en Español. It started earlier this month when the Weather Channel celebrated its 40th anniversary. By the way, I was there when it happened at the National Cable Television Association's convention that year. We will speak live Wednesday on Tomorrow Be Televised with the editor-in-chief, the person who's making that service go, Susy Ruiz. And then 1 week from today, we'll kick things off with an exclusive interview with the creator and executive producer of the forthcoming AMC series, Dark Winds. Some of the other executive producers involved, Robert Redford, and the creator of Game of Thrones, George R.R. Martin. They're passion projects for both of them. His name is Graham Rowland. I think you'll enjoy meeting him. By the way, he was also involved in a show called Lost, which did quite well on ABC for a good run. Graham Rowland from Dark Winds, which is premiering next month on AMC. He will join us live as our lead guest Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific here on Tomorrow Be Televised. A number of the smart TV, I want to get your thoughts about other aspects of interactive TV in the remaining moments. First of all, we know that a number of the smart TV set makers, Samsung, LG, and others, are coming up with these game hubs where they hope to have video games that are cloud-delivered on the television set, and you can play them either with your voice or with a wireless controller without the use of a console. What's your thinking about what they're thinking?
Sure. I think there's absolutely a place for game distribution to those formats. I think you already see casual games have been ported to Roku and to various other connected TVs today. So there's that opportunity. But, you know, one experiment that we did way back in the day at Sony Pictures was taking a game show format and bringing it to interactive TV. because it, you know, when you reference Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy, those were the exact shows that we brought to interactive TV way long ago, right? Because as you're watching those types of programs, you're of course playing along with what you're seeing, right? So you could be passive and watch those game shows, but really you want to see if you could beat the on-air contestants. So like with many things, you know, it depends on the state of mind of the consumer. What is the programming? Is it made for the medium, right? And what is that opportunity to bring delight to your audience? So I think there are opportunities, but you really have to take a look at the technology, the use case, and tailor it so it's really compelling.
Mm-hmm. Last month, Netflix got back into the interactive game with a daily project called Trivia Quest. It was an interactive animated game show. Vin Rubino, who's been on our show several times, who works on the $100,000 Pyramid, he's a top executive producer, also does The Chase for ABC, which is currently now in its latest season on Tuesday nights. He was involved with it. It was a very interesting experiment. We don't know yet if that's going to continue. We've heard good things about the feedback from Netflix. But it looks like Netflix, after a little bit of a lull, is now starting to come back to do interactive TV using their branch manager technology that they pioneered in the Emmy Award-winning Bandersnatch from the Black Mirror people. They've got a rom-com in development. I think they have an animated series coming out soon. Any thoughts about this sort of comeback that Netflix is trying to make in the area of interactivity?
Yeah, I think it's an evolution. And, you know, I was a consumer of Bandersnatch. I really enjoyed it. You know, I grew up on Choose Your Own Adventures. It was a very common format to me. And I really, you know, enjoyed trying to figure out how to get to that one ending that was so difficult to end to. There was a combination to get there, and that was really cool. So I thought they did a great job. But again, I think, you know, you've got an audience in general who's played video games their entire lives. They were brought up on the internet. They're consuming content on Twitch and expect some level of interactivity. So it really doesn't surprise me that major players like Netflix are investing in this type of programming, because it feels very natural for especially an up-and-coming audience. So I expect to see more of this. I think some of these experiments are pretty straightforward. You know, you're going to learn a lot from them. I think the experiences GenVid is bringing to market are far more robust. But, you know, as an industry, seeing all of these experiments and investments starting to pay off is very encouraging.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen Fireside, the interactive venture from Mark Cuban?
I have not.
Last November, we had Fallon, the general manager of the service. It's really fascinating. It's a service where you can be part of live programming, everything from seeing Jay Leno at a auto sale to Deepak Chopra taking part in a meditation, even becoming part of a scripted or hybrid scripted show. It looks like they're doing very well. They got more funding. The question is, will they turn this service and make it available on smart TV sets and devices? And hopefully we'll know in the next few months where they will do that. They're certainly in there. But one thing I did want to ask before you went is sports betting, because you were involved with Fox Bet. And it looks like we may finally start to see the idea of sports betting, whether it's for real money or games where you that are not, you know, the sort of gamifications, they like to say, getting up to speed. Any plans you see GenVid taking in the sports betting area or incorporating it into future projects?
Well, I'm glad you brought up the aspect of gamification, because I think, you know, from my experience working on Fox Bet, whether it was for real money in legal betting states or Fox Bet's free-to-play app, which is nationwide called Super 6, there was a large amount of engagement. Because again, you know, you're passionate about what you're watching on TV. You're passionate about your home team or a player, and you know you're rooting for them to win. And either legal sports betting, where regulated, or free to play type application does add to the engagement and somewhat you know increases your investment in many different ways in watching that programming. So I do think, you know, again, in this whole theme of interactivity that we've been talking about, you know, that's just another example of ways to engage an audience, right, and make them active where they may have been passive. And they all have different merits and different use cases. But again, it's consumer demand is driving a lot of what we've been talking about today. Technology enables it. So is there a future in that industry for GenBit? I'm not sure. We're really focused on this concept of taking narrative storytelling and allowing players to become engaged in a different way and impact the canon.
Yeah. Final question for you. At some point, do you see the major creative people in television getting involved in things like your enterprise?
Well, look, I think they are already. I mean, we're so fortunate to be partnered with Skybound Entertainment and the incredible storytellers there. And, of course, having Robert Kirkman's participation in the project is incredible. So I do see, more and more who would be traditional storytellers, masters of their craft, looking at the tool sets and the things that are available as audiences begin to engage in much more meaningful ways, deeper ways, and want to express themselves. So I think the palette is wide open for creatives to come in and, build these new experiences for consumers based on this new technology that's available.
The company we've been talking about is GenBit Technologies, and Andrew Schneider is now the new president of their entertainment division, which will be coming out later this summer with The Walking Dead. The Walking Dead Last Mile. Now they'll be running on Facebook Watch, which is available on smart TV sets and smart devices, and we'll see if Portal TV picks it up as well, which is a smart TV player. And in the meantime, if you want to find out more about what GenBit is up to, here's where you go online, www.genbittech.com. www.genbittech.com. And I promise you, we'll keep you up to speed on what this amazing interactive company is up to. Andrew Schneider, congratulations again on your new role with GenBit. Thank you for coming aboard and making this one of your first interviews in your new role. And all the very best to you, and look forward to hearing and catching what your company is up to and how it continues to break the ground in the world of interactive television, which is getting wider and wider and more mainstream as we speak.
Thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate it. Stay cool this weekend.
Absolutely. You take care. Enjoy the weekend to the max.
Bye now.
Andrew Schneider, the new president of GenBit Entertainment, joining us live from Long Island. Time now for our classic trivia question of the week. Final time that we're offering this particular question. We've been doing it since a week ago Monday. If you're first with the correct answer, get ready. We will give you the new Rugrats Hanukkah book and another bestseller, Binge Time, whose authors were on the show a couple of weeks ago. Here's the question. On the TV series Quincy M.E., starring Jack Klugman, what does M.E. stand for? On Quincy M.E., which, by the way, now you can be seeing many episodes on YouTube, what does M.E. stand for? If you know the answer, you know what to do. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget, when you email, include your name and your mailing address so that if you get the correct answer first and correct, you will win those prizes, and we'll get them to you ASAP. And if we don't get a winner by the end of today, we will post the question on Saturday morning on Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon. TWBT, the UBC Simon, TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to play in. So do so, and all the very best. One more time, the question on the TV series Quincy M.E. starring Jack Klugman, what does M.E. stand for? And again, you have to send it by email with your name and address. And by the way, if you've won previously, unfortunately, you're not eligible. But do pass it along to other people you know, because they like to be first-time winners, too. So make sure you have that happen. Again, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Coming up in our next half hour, you'll meet the two people behind World Channel from WGH in Boston. They have a very interesting series they've got cooking. The latest episode will be running a week from today called Growing Up Asian. You will hear General TV Manager Liz Cheng and Executive Producer Patricia Nunez. They will join us live from Boston when we come back. And pause at the bottom of the top of the hour, I should say. That's top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com. Best internet radio on the planet, reaching over 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you like some very interesting conversation and maybe some music too, check it out with Mixing It with Nikki Chris. That's Mixing It with Nikki Chris. That's this coming Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, Best Beats are 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our final half hour of this Friday afternoon edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. And welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Simon, I'm with you live from New York, 62 degrees at the top of the hour. Right now, it's sort of gray skies. We may get some late showers in the New York metro area. We are expecting a heat wave, not only here in New York, but up and down the East Coast and the South as well. Temperatures are supposed to be in the low to mid-90s, and the same for Sunday as well. So if you're doing anything special this weekend in any of the up and down the East Coast areas or in the South, please take it easy, plan ahead, drink lots of fluids, water, juices, whatever. All works great. Take your time. And you'll have a great, great weekend. And so will yours truly as well. We have some wonderful guests for you in the half hour remaining. So make use of the time. Spend some time with them. And if you have a question or comment, make a call. The number you use, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're connected to the country around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, SpeakerTune Radio. And our chat room is still open for you. It's SimonApple04. And you'll find it at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. A number of public television stations over the last few years have been very insightful when it comes to using smart TV sets and smart TV devices by making original channels. Here in New York, WNET with All Arts, and WGBH in Boston with World Channel. And World Channel has now started to do some of its own original programming, including a series whose latest episode called Growing Up Asian, the series is called Stories from the Stages, will be premiering this coming Monday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern time. Joining us live from the studios of WGBH in Boston, Massachusetts, are the executive in charge, general manager of World Channel, that is Liz Chang, and executive producer Patricia Nunez. Liz and Patricia, welcome in.
Thank you so much, Simon. Thank you so much for having us. We're thrilled to be here. Thank you for mentioning our partners, WNET World. So exciting to be here.
Great. Thank you so much, Simon.
Yes, Patricia, absolutely. Liz, we'll start with you. Tell us, first of all, where World Channel is at.
So World Channel, we're based at GBH. We're a national 24/7 channel. We're seen on public media channels and markets representing 74% of U.S. television households. So that means WNET World in New York, WTTW in Washington, D.C., WTTW in Chicago, and WETA in Washington, D.C., and certainly KQED World in San Francisco. So we're all across the country. And we air the best in PBS documentaries, as well as lots of original work that we like to say is from multicultural makers and producers reporting from the heart of their own diverse communities. So our team at World has, with our independent directors and producers, have won all the top national awards, Emmy, DuPont, Peabody, et cetera, for work with our documentary producers. And frankly, you know, while we offer solutions and great stories about resilience and hope, Patricia, who's on the call with me and my co-executive producer on the show, and our managing editor, Chris Hastings, gosh, we decided we needed a series that could share stories of every kind of difference in an uplifting and hopeful way that hopefully would go beyond tolerance and even acceptance to achieve understanding and a celebration of our differences as human beings. So that's how, you know, Stories from the Stage came about. But you know, for example, for May, World Channel has curated more than 50 films, that's 50 films, about and by the AAPI community, including 10 original documentaries and programmings addressing so many issues from attacks on the AAPI community and immigration, Making It in America, and more. And our Stories from the Stage, Growing Up Asian, is just one of our many original programming that we are putting on for the AAPI Heritage Month. I mean, we like to say that we do this programming for all BIPOC communities, not just AAPI, throughout the year. But in May, we like to put an exclamation point on it.
And that's a good segue to you, Patricia. How did Stories from the Stage happen? What inspired the series?
So one evening, Liz noticed that our home-based GBH in Boston was putting on a very popular evening of live storytelling. And she came back to, you know, our department, and it's like, hey, let's just try to figure out how we could bring this event to television. And we, you know, all recognize that there is definitely a great appetite for the storytelling in our world, so it was a good moment to do it. So in 2017, we started the production of Stories from the Stage. We have really good partners in this. We have GBH events, and we also work with our director, Michael Rossi, and Cheryl Hamilton, who is our coach, story coach, and help us find some of the stories. And it's just a great team, and we have been doing this for now for 5 seasons. And we, in April, actually celebrated our 100th episode. So we have recorded over 300 stories with people pretty much from all over the world. So it has been really a fabulous journey.
You know, Liz, of all the performing arts, storytelling is probably the most unique because it's a mix of script, which is storytelling, and performance. Because people are doing this performance in public and really is sort of, their, in many cases, their own human stories. How did you find out about this art form, which is performed all over the country and around the world, as Trisha was saying, and then decide, let's give it a shot as a regular series?
Well, it's amazing because when you think about it, all of us from our very first, you know, days walking on this planet have experienced storytelling in our own home lives and then, you know, greater families, and then we're out in schools and certainly out working. And everyone does some form of storytelling all day long. And we just sort of felt that with this kind of storytelling, if we could feature storytellers from all backgrounds, all circumstances and orientation, that would just have so much of a deeper context for everything that we're experiencing today, particularly conflict. I mean, we have to feel that that if you hear a story from somebody who is very different from yourself, and that who you might say, oh, I could never be friends with someone like that. But if you hear them and you say to yourself, oh, now I understand their point of view, someone who looks incredibly different from me, but maybe when I hear their story is not all that different, we feel that it's impossible to fear or hate them. So, you know, we like to think about Stories from the Stage as sort of our good citizen show, that people who bravely go up on stage to tell their stories, they could be, gosh, your mother, your father, your sister, your brother, your best friend, and they, in their story, can help to conquer ignorance about themselves, about their community, and really cause a meeting of the minds, which is, we believe, the permanent solution to discrimination and injustice. So, in essence, storytelling has been happening since the beginning of time. Certainly, we know with radio and radio podcasts, there are lots of storytelling programs. But we felt that when you can see, when someone gets up there and you make that snap judgment, oh, wow, that person is completely different from me. But by the end of their story, you say, maybe they're not all that different from me. That kind of understanding is so hard to achieve sometimes in documentary filmmaking or even in dramatic filmmaking. But when you know that story is real and is being reported by that person, there's almost nothing like it in terms of being able to make a connection and to make that human connection.
And
talking
I would
about
like
World
to
Channel,
add that,
it is the National Available Service. Go ahead. Go ahead.
No. I just want to say that for us, you know, since day one, to have as many voices as possible on our stage have been, you know, our mission, our goal. And it, as Liz was saying, you know, it's very important to hear other perspectives. That is exactly what we try to do, to celebrate and bring new insights. So, you know, every season we come up with themes and have an open call so people submit stories. And sometimes we read about people or hear about them because now the show is quite popular and people want to be on the show. So, you know, we get calls from people like, I have a friend or I know somebody in my community who will be amazing in your story, have a great story. And it has been, you know, a process to get all these voices to the stage. Because definitely, you know, if we make a space for people and their stories, we make a space for empathy, for understanding, and a place to connect. That's what we have been trying to do since day one.
Mm-hmm. World Channel is the nationally available service from WGBH in Boston. It's available in a number of different ways. In some markets, available as a multicast service on the digital series of public television stations, also as a cable channel. And in some markets, it's available also on smart TV sets, smart TV devices, and multi-channel bundles. And we're talking specifically about one of their original series called Stories from the Stages, whose latest episode, Growing Up Asian, will be on World Channel this coming Monday, May 23rd, 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. We are talking with the general manager of the service, Liz Cheng, and executive producer, Patricia Nunez. They're both live with us from Beantown, Boston, Mass., this half hour right here on Tamavi Televised. Happy you're aboard with us on this Friday afternoon, wherever you may be. Simon Appel, I'm with you live from New Ever York. Happy you're aboard, whether you're on Blog Talk Radio, SpeakerTune Radio, where you're catching us after the fact on various podcast sites, and our brand new website, tomorrowwillbetelevised.onpodium.com. Remember, tomorrow will be televised, hyphens between the words, then .onpodium.com. So do check it out, because after we wrap up today, that's among the places that you can catch us within minutes after we go off the air. Patricia, how do you set up an episode like Growing Up Asia? Do you go to, let's say, a storytelling performance and see these people and determine who gets to tell their story on that episode? So explain how an episode comes together.
So as I mentioned, every season we have themes that we think are very interesting, and we start brainstorming of who could be part of this episode. We have also an open call. People can go to worldchannel.org and submit their story. And they have to follow directions there on how to do it. And we read a lot of submissions. Liz and I and Cheryl, our curator and coach, Cheryl Hamilton, we go through all the submissions and we then select the ones that resonate the most with us. And sometimes there are members of the community, like, for example, in this episode, we have Suzanne Lee, who is a retired Boston Public School principal. She has an amazing story about the Boston time in Boston. And we felt that this was a story that we have not heard. Because this, you know, the Boston time is pretty much like a black and white story, and this was another perspective. So we definitely brought her to the stage. And I would like to mention that during COVID, you know, before COVID, we had a full studio, a studio with like 180 people will come to each performance, or sometimes more. But during COVID, we pretty much had no audience. So we had to table these some of these stories without an audience. And it was hard, but we did it because, you know, there is a special connection of the storyteller with the audience, but it just couldn't happen. So we taped Suzanne Lee in an empty studio, but she did a tremendous job telling her story. And then we also had David, who came from New York. We have people coming from all over the country. A lot of people come from New York. And it's Son Kim that I think is one of those stories that is an incredible story about, you know, a young woman who gets into at least, do you want to describe
well,
this story? This is one of your favorite stories.
It's an incredibly haunting story. And she is, her father owns a small store. And they get stuck up, basically. Someone tries to rob them. And she learns a lot about her own culture, about family, what family love means. And in that kind of crucial moment where, you know, her life was in danger, it's just an incredible story. It's the kind of story that will haunt you and in a good way. once you hear it. And frankly, Simon, it's so important now more than ever to bring these stories about Asian Americans, not just because it's AAPI Heritage Month. I mean, number one, Asian Americans are the fastest growing populations in many regions across the country. And when you think about it, the diversity within Asian Americans is amazing, with more than 30 different countries and ethnicities that can be used to describe Asian Americans. So you can imagine just the sheer diversity of languages, of cultures, food, and more. And we try to reflect that in our storytellers by not just having Chinese Americans, not just having Korean Americans, but having this kind of wide array of people with different experiences and from different countries, countries of origin. And here in America, there are common experiences for many of our AAPI, you know, trying to work, get an education, raise a family, all the aspects that every American can identify who live here in America. But throughout history, all AAPI have also experienced incredible discrimination, acts of violence, and all of the above. And no more greater time than now. We're certainly seeing a deadly upswing in AAPI attacks. And, you know, there's so many reasons for that. But, you know, the terrible spike up is, and really, you know, Simon, it's anybody who looks Asian or Asian American, right? It doesn't have the time, it might not even be somebody who self-describes as Asian American. It's not just loss of life, it's loss of businesses going out of control, all because AAPI are being wrongly blamed for the COVID-19 pandemic. And, you know, these attacks have brought about this incredibly diverse community that I just described has brought us together like no other issues. The violence is random, and as I said, it could happen to anyone. And, you know, it's the kind of stories that I think anyone who walks in a neighborhood or walks somewhere and they're suddenly unsure and afraid of for their health and for their well-being that I think can identify with. So I think more than ever these stories need to come out, and I think our storytellers will elicit a lot of responses from people, whether you're AAPI or not, when they hear them.
And I also,
go ahead, Tisha.
Well, sorry, yeah. Simon. I just want to mention that, you know, we have these three stories in this episode in May, but really throughout the series, since day one, we have a very diverse lineup of storytellers, and we actually have created a playlist on Facebook, on our Stories from the Stage Facebook page. And we have many, many more stories that are, you know, wonderful and celebrate the Asian American, you know, community and voices. So that is also another resource because in one show we only can present three stories, but in the playlist people can hear even more.
Yeah. I do want to say that a week ago we featured a new service called Chime TV, which is going to launch this fall, which is an Asian American-owned television service, ad-supported, as part of a trio of new networks that we featured a week ago. Nuestra TV, which is a bilingual service, which is a service that's going to offer unscripted, maybe scripted programming later on, funded by blockchain technology. All three services are going to launch the second half of this year. I'm happy to tell you that we've had great reaction to that episode. It's now our most viewed listened to episode on Blog Talk Radio so far this month, and we're getting more replays as we speak. So we just want you to know that. I didn't want
to
ask either of you. It sounds, you said a moment ago, that the pandemic, because of Zoom, it may have been a blessing for this series in terms of getting storytellers from other parts of the country. Is that a fair thing to say?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
You know, when you think about it, you know, we do go to different cities. We've gone to, you know, to Tennessee. We've gone to Houston. We've gone to Seattle. We've taped episodes all around the country. But when the pandemic happened, it sort of forced us to say, okay, let's look at a new model here. How can we continue to tape storytellers and share them throughout the country? And so we were able to go to even more cities than we normally would be able to go to and have multiple cities represented in a single episode. And so it's just been amazing that way. And there's something about being able to tape someone in their own living room or in their own, you know, study or wherever they are in their home, in their apartment, that is so intimate and incredibly special and that emotional attachment. And then, you know, when you see the show, we have wide shots, we have audience shots, we have other shots. When we had these stories done on Zoom, we only focused on the storyteller with all the storyteller, and it was especially hard for them because, you know, here they're coming from the haven of their home, but there's no audience. You know, there is nobody to sort of, you know, to respond. And then what we could do is, what we decided to do is to have live events where we would show these taped stories, and then we would have the interviews live so that people could ask questions for the, and that was a wonderful aspect that we never would have been able to do, you know, with a national television show shot in the studio. So we tried to make lemonade out of lemons, as the saying goes. And we found that it really changed the aspect of the show and made it way more intimate. So one of the first Growing Up shows we did was Growing Up Black. And that, I can't tell you the number of people who told us that, you know, watching it live at home or watching it, you know, or watching it, you know, on tape, that they were weeping because these stories were so raw and so intimate and so close and so emotionally charged that it really made them understand and to walk in another person's shoes for at least, you know, the period of time of the story.
Yeah. And, you know, Simon, there is something very interesting about storytelling, and it's the generosity of the storyteller. And what Liz is mentioning, that, you know, when they're on the stage, they come to the stage and they sometimes tell stories that are very hard to tell. And they have to, you know, be very strong to be able to tell the story without crying or breaking down in the middle. And so there is a different and even situation when you are taping them from their home, because they open up their home to us, and they did. And they, I will say, Liz, they were incredibly generous. Like, we have been
exactly.
Very fortunate with
very
our
fortunate.
Storytellers. Because there is, like, sometimes I even get, you know, messages from them that how just being able to tell the story on our stage have changed them, or
right.
things that
Help
they
them.
Have learned, or people they want to honor with the story, and they have been able to do it through this the opportunity. So it has been really, go ahead, Liz.
So, and in essence, you know, it's amazing. We ask in our interviews why people do this, because it's very hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, many of us, and certainly Simon, you know, you get up there and you can talk in front of anyone, but ask you or me to tell a personal story, and suddenly I become tongue-tied. So why do people do this? Sharing the most difficult, the most challenging, the most awful, and also the most rewarding and uplifting times in their lives. Why would they do this? For, you know, for a national audience. And almost every person will say, either one, because I needed to work through this, and or two, I hope my story can help somebody else. And so that incredible generosity, it comes from, you know, it comes from love for human beings, but also the fact that your story can make such a difference in another person's life.
And it's a great way for these people to work through their catharsis or work through closure, if you will. We have a few minutes left.
Exactly.
Liz, what else is in the original pipeline at World Channel? And also wanted to ask you about the fact that earlier this month, WNET here in New York launched an ad-supported channel for smart TV sets and smart devices. Is that something that WGBH and maybe other public television stations might consider doing as well on the national level?
Absolutely. We have a couple of channels that we on Prime Video that we share with PBS, you know, through our PBSD program, and they're channels that are completely devoted to documentaries, completely devoted to how-to, and completely devoted to masterpiece drama. So we're already going in that direction because, you know, we as public media, we want to be everywhere, you know, and we want to be where people are consuming content. And if we're not everywhere, then we need to be there because we are the people's network. And this is the people's money, people's network, people donate to us. And in terms of, you know, all that World Channel is doing around this month alone, as I said, we have 10 documentaries. One aired last night called Geographies of Kinship, and it's about the program in Korea of exporting babies and to be adopted. It was a business in a way, and it's a way of dealing with the problem of having so many orphans. And four adult Korean children who are grown up now going back to Korea to try and find their roots and find their original families. A second one is called A Tale of Three Chinatowns, and it's a cautionary tale about the future of these really important affinity neighborhoods. At first, you know, the Chinese were put in Chinatowns to be segregated, and then they turned that into a positive. They turned it into a haven where familiar language and services and all of the above can help people. And now there are so many other affinity neighborhoods like Little Saigons and Little Cambodias, and how important they are today and how at risk they are, most especially in D.C., Chicago, and Boston. We have a third original film called Chinatown Rising, and is about the political growth and strength of the San Francisco Chinatown, and their political activity has helped their Chinatown remain strong and vibrant in these, you know, difficult times. And then we have seven shorts that we have commissioned with ADOC, which is an Asian American film group, and they cover the gamut from the FedExpress killings in Minneapolis to Stop the AAPI Hate, to dealing with COVID, loss of jobs, immigration, all these. And what's so exciting about it is that they are working with emerging and new filmmakers, so new voices on the scene. So that's very important to us to make sure that we grow that next generation of filmmakers. And we, you know, have incredible partners, Center for Asian American Media. We have ADOC. We have so many other folks who have partnered with us on this on these programs. So it's all very important. As I say, we put an exclamation point on it in May, but it's something that we're committed to. You know, we certainly do it for Black History Month, for Native American History Month, for Latinx History Month. Those are all different, BIPOC communities. But they share so much in the way of being able to be resilient and to thrive in this time that can be so difficult.
And we're going to have to leave it there. If you want more details about World Channel, which is available, as we said, on multicast channels, on the local television station, digital signals, plus smart TV sets, smart device, multi-channel bundles, here's where you go online, worldchannel.org. That's worldchannel.org. And again, the latest episode of Stories from the Stage, Growing Up Asia, this Monday night, 9:30 Eastern time. Liz and Patricia, thank you both very much for coming on. It's been a pleasure to have you. All the very best to you and the continued good fortune with World Channel and what you're up to, particularly with the original programming.
Thank you, Simon. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for all the time and your attention and, you know, your research on us. We really appreciate it.
You're very, very welcome.
Thank you so much.
Have a super weekend.
You too. Stay cool.
And we also wish all of you a wonderful weekend. Rest assured, those are the participants. I would say those are Block Talk Radio and other streamers of this program. Andy Toews, B-Charge, General Manager, Jay Fallberger, head of content. Smart Televised is brought to you today by Audible.com, the audio marketplace of Amazon.com. Remember, Audible transforms the way you hear the world. Make a great gift for you or someone you love. Remember, we will be back here on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific. You know where. Block Talk Radio, Speaker Channel Radio, all of our podcast destinations, and our website, Smart Televised, on Podium.com. On podium.com. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Have yourself a fantastic weekend ahead. Remember, stay well with the heat, and we thank you for your listening as well. And remember, if you haven't been vaccinated, check in with your doctor, check your medical records, and find out the medical alternatives coming your way, and then make a great choice, your choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.